test here. How many days, yeah? I'm a little rather looking at it, yeah? Whenever it's back here, yeah? I'm a little rather looking at it. And generally, we've explained the last time the testament of the will, which Rabbi Shiva later left. And of course, now we are coming to a game, to a three questions from each Rebbe, Rebbe, is imparted to children, three questions. Again, apparently, they represent principles, basic aspects of life. And I want you to understand the Gemara and the one of the Shulchan Aruch. The Halacha, basically, not only the Halacha, the so-called Ishi Halacha, the representatives of Halacha, the scholars, the Halacha scholars, we are very shy people, shy and reluctant to tell others about their inner experiences. And they always lack self-control and discipline. They never display their emotions like love and joy and sadness. Hysteria is something which the Allah hates. Comprehensible is even repugnant to the Allah. Then the emotions overwhelm the person. And that's why we only spoke in technical, about technical details. The weather is not a clue, it is our hand. There's no feeling for the Allah. And they think that our Allah is colors are just technicians, very dry, the rise of the great, colorful religious experience. And the worship of God was a technical, mechanical performance. It's not clue. Not me. It is just, the Allah and behind the Allah. It is under the disguise of Allah, a detailed behavior which has been prescribed and determined in its minutest details. There is a great experience, a great honor to God and the Jews and men. However, we are not confiding very much. Mystics, other faiths have confided. Confided false in our language and false people about their visions. And their encounters and confrontations with divinity are the one they spoke in a conceptual language, in abstract. In general, we don't confide too much. Our emotional world, our experiences, failure, our defeat, and vice versa, triumphs and victories are all private affairs. Not to be confided with anybody and not to be made public. That's why sometimes you come across Shulchan Aruch, a very detail which at first glance appears to be completely irrelevant. Of course, the one who is not acquainted with the Halachic. The Halachic methodology, and particularly the soul of the Halacha, may arrive at conclusions at which so many masculine arrive sooner before they are redefined. This is the main objection to raise against the Halacha, that we are too technical, we have no sympathy, no compassion. We somehow act like, I can tell you, like machines. This is not true. Nothing is far from the truth. That existence. I'm not saying this in an apologetic manner. I never engage in apologies. It's a great, the Halachic sea is a stormy sea. Not only a stormy sea in an intellectual sense, but also in an emotional, an experiential sense as well. And that's why I want to tell you, the Rambam also represents Allah. When you read the Rambam, the Mayor of Rufim, and again, he misled many people into thinking that he was actually just mind without heart, just logic without feeling. just another without any motion. Not Buddha, but actually is experienced as brought up and the ecstatic. These moments is almighty. Some thoughts overwhelming and passionate that you think he was God intoxicated. But you have to read between the lines and find things in order to find the real Rama. Because Rama likes, I mean, and this is a feature which is characteristic of many scholars, likes to simply appear to the outside world as a cool, objective, detached scholar and philosopher. He sees the world and understands the world, but does not experience it. But it's the wrong impression I get. Sometimes, I would say, in moments of weakness, actually, and somehow he was intoxicated with the experience, he drops to ignore that truth. But then right away, he changes the style. He says, for instance, what I don't want to explain. It's very characteristic of the Jewish people. So why am I saying it? Because we are going again to read, I mean, of instructions which some of us seem to be a bit trivial. But they represent, again, the instructions represent basic principles, actually, a philosophical approach to life. Amar li Rav Levinei, Rav said to his children, Shatem chitchim boso, when you are cutting meat, al tachtachu al gavayat, don't cut the meat on the hand. Hold the piece of meat on the palm of the hand and cut with the knife against the hand. There is a palm. Ikedamre, some people say the reason for it, we should cut on it. Because there's no not a police involved, you simply cut his hand. At me, I mean, sometimes you press the knife and you cut your hand. Ikedamre, we should kill Kusure. You spoil the meal. So how will you spoil the meal? If you should cut your hand, of course, I mean, blood is into it, that's how you need. And of course, it would be a repugnant. We are taking and do not fit on Mita Sarami. But on the third, there are two, if the reading is the word Mita, the name of Tov, it means in the Swiss form, means upon the birth of an Aramean, or Aramean woman. Then I want to understand, when you say bed, when you read the glass extra, they have no chair. They used to sit at your own bed, meeting Zorba Chesed. Roma Mitra la Mitra, Asher Esther Olea. It's not a conscious one. I mean, they used to leave. I mean, during the meal, they used to leave. So it was a comfortable reclining chair, more or less. Cross, of course. A tall stuff, not a hard chair, but a tall stuff. They do not sit in a chair, but an Aramean woman. We will see what it means. If the stock should be eliminated and substituted by hay, our Nito Aramis means do not sit upon an Aramean bed or chair. Aramis means an adjective. The Altaru should not press. Ahura de Takrepes, the front of the hind hole, behind of the synagogue, the Shosha Sibyl is falling while the congregation is engaged in the recital of its prayer. Now let us just read and translate literally, then I'll explain later. I'll teach you our Mita Saramis. What does it mean? Ike de Amru, because I'm going to some examples, like the dot down from the wheel, which rolled down the doors of caution, he did not explain. He just left the word, I mean, it was enigmatic sentence. גם על פרישו על מיטה תרמי איקה זה אמרה להסגמו בלי קרי השמע don't fall asleep without reciting the שמע פרק so what does it mean על מיטה תרמי don't sleep on the bed מיטה תרמי על הרמי in bed which resembles the bed of an anju of an Aramean tower I want you to understand the Arameans when they speak always the word Arami with a thought, with a certain race means also ignorant ignorant people, uncultured, unlettered people as well it means don't sleep in a bed which resembles that of an Aramean what does it mean? In other words means you should not fall asleep or retire or go to bed without reciting Rishma first. When you recite Rishma, so the bed is converted into a Jewish bed. You need that before. When you don't recite Rishma, you simply get undressed and fall on the bed. And if you retire, then it's the Mitra Arami. It's a non-Jewish bed. What do you say? No, it's not. Arami. Think about Rishma. No, explain it. Of course, the Mitra Ramit is a metaphor. In such a case, the Mitra Ramit is a metaphor. It's not to be taken literally. It means don't retire in an analogy to the Mitra or characteristic of an angel. So that's very simple. Rashi says, Shetain Mitkosok, if you're dead, Dine, similar. Yomita Tarami, the Aramean bed. Strange expression. Vike de Amre, some people interpret it, what is this saying? Relate not to the youth. You should not marry a proselyte woman. It's Tanda. Allah has to leave Tanda. Did you? Proselyte woman is a two-threat Jewish. No difference, absolutely. But however, what advise the children not to marry a proselyte woman. I was funny. The Ikeda Amre, that was a third interpretation, it was apparently posthumous. Because in what was aligned with the Baptists, apparently it wasn't the testament the year after his death, and they found those three instructions. Simply they didn't know the meaning of the word. Vikeda Amre Aramis Mamesh. Of course, the second interpretation is also Nishat Aramis is more as a summary, as a metaphor. Vikeda Amre that was a man literally. You should mind the rapport. That's it. What happened to rapport is you explain. The rapport is also regarding Aramis. You went to collect the Shalmet of them. He went to collect, she owed him money. Of course, after all, she didn't want to pay or she didn't intend to pay. In theory, she brought out a chair, she needed a chair. From all the shades, that is certain. On our way, he told her, in a yeshi, I wouldn't sit down. After the beer, some mito, you raise that bolstering, I mean, the cushion, which is on the chair. It's beer, some mito, so she raised the cushion. In most of them, they found a dead baby. So she wanted him to sit down, and then she reported to the police, and I thought, that he killed the baby, that he's playing with the baby. The fourth, she would have been, she would be released after her. And that is bad, you see. כאן אמרו חכמים, חכמים שאת, also make it our mitzvah tarami before you investigate what's underneath. Now let me continue reading, now come. Al tabru achura bit hakneses b'shosh ativa nispari. Don't sit behind the synagogue while the congregation is busier reciting its prayer. The silence of the shura lady. This coincides with the opinion of Abishu Balei. Gama Abishu Balei, Abishu Balei will say it once. Also, when a man, the person already has done it. Right, but he recited it. us and them, but it passes by, heaven to pass by. It's still like that. Which, I mean, it's too busy, I mean, to engage in the cycle. Also, the other thing, Yahweh, Rahul, and Pitak, and the church are still on its salaries. Oma, Abaya, Abaya, qualify the Allah. We are mourning, this Allah is the qualified. And the wicked, black, and Pitak, is the only entrance to the synagogue. It's always in the back or in the front, meaning on the side, which is at the back. And the wicked, Pitak, if there's another door, you can enter the synagogue. So another door, left one door, we don't object. So among, again, it's qualified again, of the wicked priest of Sine, if there is no other synagogue in town. Of the wicked priest of Sine, there is another synagogue in town, left one door, not objectionable. He's talking behind the synagogue. So among, and of the late door of Sine, again, it's qualified, the person has to walk. Just takes a walk, but if he carries a burden, he carries something, he carries a load, so it does not run. And the monarch feels, and he doesn't have any, he feels that hanging, then it's objectionable. And we can have a lot, if for instance he carries a load, he has a load. Or, he's hanging, yeah, that's very busy. Or, if you want me, on his head and his arm, left one door, you don't object. Take that thought. Don't let them attend it for a while. Al-Tahtakhu Fish Atom Fitkin Bosser, should be when you're cutting meat, don't cut on the hand. But put it on the table and cut the meat. Yeah, I want you to understand, I mean, they had very little furniture in the house, very little, very little. And the tables they had were not made for work. The tables were very small tables, and they used to serve, instead of trade, they used to serve on tables. They learned from the artist's pocket, the viewers for sure from before the table. So instead of serving, they used to bring before each one, and they used to sit on the almost on the floor, on cushions on the floor, and they used to bring each guest. To bring the foreign chef to put up the table. Yeah. So don't cut the meat in which, apparently the meat which you serve yourself, or the roast yourself, the bird, you cut it, you count the meat. So the table's there. So don't count the meat, you don't cut the meat from your hand, then you should pull the meat by your hand, by the palm of your hand, but count it while the meat is on the table. And the Gemara gives two reasons. If you don't know which is not on it, Rasha says, "Shnei yokos yadei should not cut his hand." Vikadame mishum kiltuk ture. What is kiltuk ture? As the chazur of Tano. It doesn't matter how big the company is. How many people invite it to the meal. But if it's a small group, Yitzidam, blood will drip. The lachlech of Tamacho will drip under the soil of the food. The yamis esamis tubim will be repugnant to those who are invited to eat. Yes, the yamis are invited to come in. What? I beg your pardon? Chabur of Tano, as Chabur of Tano, you're trying to cut down yourself a little bit. Yesei, Zaham, V'lach Lecha Tamachol, V'yam Yitzchem Tzimri. Ha? Give a little bit. So what is that? First of all, the Chazal said, Mishum Sakone, Shnei Yokos Yadei. And this is exactly what is very typical of Yahadus. Of Yahadus, that the Yahadus was very much concerned with the body, with the health of the body. And you know very well that techniques you see for the sinners to spend their love, the destruction of free love. And you have this extremely, extremely concerned, the men should also be cautious. Basically, you have this as the prime effect requirement, actually. The prime norm, the men should always, should never take risks, impossible risks, and should always employ safety measures. I mean, how many laws do you have about machines upon it? Hundreds of laws, which actually are not for religious origins. They are just enjoying the common sense that by doing something you will expose yourself to risk, to danger. To risk, to danger, and that's forbidden, of course. Yeah. A man has no right to say, what do you care? I take them. The body of a man does not belong to him. Yeah. So, what do you care? Raise your heart, cut it in. Part of cut my hands, or cut my hands. I can cut through the jugular vein. So, it's my risk, however I can do it. Yeah. I can embark upon an adventure. So, there's no reason why someone should prohibit it. And basically, according to the common law, the law on the authorized country, so the man can take any risk he wants to. You cannot stop it. Any experiment, the most dangerous experiment, medical experiment. Alright, prisoners, it is just yet you invite prisoners because the person is free out of prison. It wouldn't do. But actually, you write a prisoner, you promise the prisoner that you'll reduce the sentence, or if he's set free, he should subject himself to some medical experiment. First, if you want to fly to the moon, fly to the moon. The only difference in common law is, for instance, if, for instance, someone asks for that, if I will take a 7-year-old boy, 7-year-old boy along, to the capsule to the moon, of course, it'll be stopped. But I cannot take risk on behalf of a minor who himself cannot decide, himself does not understand the less intelligent. But as far as he is concerned, I can take any kind of risk. Normally, the people are guilty. They are guilty persons to use intelligence, not to be foolish. But if you want them to jump on you, from the tower into the river, unless you suspect the person is insane. If there is a suspicion the person is insane, is not responsible for his actions, then you're fucked. Then it's the duty of society to protect the insane person, who simply himself cannot distinguish between terror and normal things, between conditions which are dangerous and so then it's simply his mind is clouded. Of course, then society will intervene. What if it is plain? Like simple and obvious terrible, and then it's normal, and then you command up all his faculties, particularly the faculty of reasoning, but he is very courageous, and he wants to take a risk, he'll do it. Okay. Interestingly, if you have Rachmishmeh, in Bay. The ruler of the Sahara raised the Sahara said, and what are you the one who made it? Shalach et anoshu yavit ha-shem lekeim, ater am tere kvart en ufai. The yusha of the slush of the Sahara, the Sahara, the yuma alay elchu yidit ha-shem, ha-lekechem, yuza mi ha-yuchim, the yuma meishu vina reine v'tinin amida, vina reine v'nisein, v'tinin amida, v'tinin amida, v'tinin amida, v'chag ha-shem yod, v'tinin amida, v'tinin amida, v'tinin amida, v'tinin amida, v'tinin amida, v'tinin amida, v'tinin Yino alei and yifin adi shem imochem Kasha shalach et kalifatem I'm not going to send to set you free. I'm going to permit you and your children to go. So we need to go and make a place. We say Yuchuno at vorem yuizu et adi shem. You go ahead and worship your God in the desert the way you want. So you start an adoption. That's what you want. But apparently the children will not let out of your pride. By God's will start. You know, Mr. Brown, Mr. Lady says very well. He says to all negative things. He felt intuitively that nations out he'd often back up on an adventure. He didn't know what nation wants. The Jews were on the train. The French, actually. They were in relative security. You don't have to imagine that this crime was actually a concentration camp. It was like a concentration camp. Some Jews worked, some Jews made money. Some Jews lived in luxury, some Jews lived in poverty. You don't have to imagine that this crime was a real concentration camp. They didn't have like Bukhara. So the southern nation comes and disturbs them in peace of mind. And the routine of the people, and tell them the story of the God wants them to lead with crying and to meet him in the desert, and to worship him, and to worship him. So he saw that he's making to run at a church. I don't know what you want. I mean, you expose the people, I mean, to danger. I mean, it's an adventure. It's an adventure. And this was the argument which we should use later. And the eagles, when the episode of the eagles occurred, and then when the episode of the dragon occurred, no one in the room is crying, the royal sea on life is on the oil. Father told them, your God wants to destroy you, I mean. To annihilate you. So what? That's why I want you to protect. Whatever you want is, you want to take the risk, go ahead. But you have no right to take the children alone. By generally, Yichinga Bishamim Mochem, Kasher Ashalach Eschem Estafem, to renew Yehoa Neret Nechem. You are exposing your children and yourself to danger. To the, I mean, actually, what will happen? It will result in complete annihilation. In complete extermination. We know it. We know that Father meant it this way, that whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I mean, he wanted, I mean, to destroy people twice. Once the eagle was made, and the second time when the scientist scout came back and gave the report about the artifact. They just, normally you will try the voice to your life. It was just money for your power to take them out. That's what Father wanted. He wants to run a decision. Alright? But I have no right to stop you. I have no right to prevent you from going. Listen, your humor is not in the evil function. To you will start in action, exactly what you want. You want everyone. One minute, one wants to jump and die to power, I mean. So he can do, we'll try to persuade him, or parasite the heart to persuade me, to change his mind. I persuade him to convince him. Yes, Pablo. Alright. But I have no, but my duty is to protect the children. From your adventure. By gosh, I shall make power. This makes a decision, wherever you have it, has a different approach. It doesn't mean that the extra means what underlies actually this approach. That man is free to take risks and to expose his life to danger, to take chances. It's the approach that the body belongs to him. His body, his life. If his life is his body, he can do whatever he wants. You have to take a different approach. You have to show that the life of the person is the one thing. Not only the life, but even the organs. So it comes the one thing. He has no right to cripple. Of course, Alayav might be sometimes I make that through the main artery. Sometimes I may cripple myself, I put a finger and so forth. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what kind of funeral mean only, I mean, it's dangerous life. It's a question of life and death. But it means any, a man has no right to cripple himself. For him, there's no right to expose himself to anything. It is not rational. It's not rational. That's what the Rambam says, we have to say that that man, human personality, human life, is not the property of the person to enjoy the life, this particular life. It belongs to other people. Okay. Okay. הרבה דברים, many things, רצו חכמים, חכמים רואים את זה, מתנאים מפני שיש בהם סכון לספושת, זאת אומרת, זה אומר את הפריט. וחולאים וחולאים, הוא היה טרנסגרסס באוצרות במאזר. ואם הרי אני מסתכל את עצמי, I have a right to expose myself to danger. ומה לאחרים עליי בכך, what I do other people have to intervene with me. ואם אני מאחים לכך, I don't care. Not only to make smart, but not only to make smart. It's simply to prevent it from doing that. No. This is Rambam. Rambam says that Achadoso Aloche Hei. Achadoso Aloche Hei. What? Then Perek Aleph says, Perek Yudalef Aloche, 11.5. And then in Perek Aleph Aloche Dalef, he says, Yusha Sateach, no, Shmirat Nefesh. As a matter of fact, the section that I'm called Yusha Sateach, the Lord Satanic, the murder, who Shmirat Nefesh, and protection of life. Protection of life. Not I have to protect somebody else, but I'm good about to protect myself. Not protection. It's not a right, it's a gift. According to some of them, it's a right. Too much. But according to our opinion, it's a gift, you know. The Ram says in Perek Aleph, Yusha Sateach Shmirat Nefesh, it means 1.1.4. That you will shein nafshei shalzeh aneirat. The life of the person was murdered. Kim yam gil adam. It's not the law. To the next of kin. No. Elohim Yalakadishbo. It's the prophecy of God. So the next of kin cannot appeal the orphan. Mother. Terminology, I mean, it's similar cases. We always encounter certain, sometimes, an appeal made by the family, but to reduce the sentence of the murder. The Congress used law shortly, even according to civil law, no one is supposed to listen to the appeal. The appeal of the brother or son or wife, the court should try to reduce the sentence of the murder, of the murder and the killer. And of course, it has absolutely no validity to the mother-in-law. But here there are most of this. It's a gay Adam, it's a gay Adam in the next kid. Wants me to come from them and say, I have compassion in the killer, I beg of you, to set him free or set him even limited sentence. So then you should ignore it because simply the next of kin has as much right to that deal as a stranger. Because life is not a property of course not at the family, of the immediate family. It's not even the property of the person involved is the property of Akadosh Baruch Hu, never the sixth case of Nefesh HaTeach. And the problem is, nothing of the world itself, and the person involved, and the murder person, nothing. This is why, that's why there is a love and a certain dominant of this effort, you should not actually, for instance, if you immaculate that effort, you should have a rule on your roof, something done with the Sechor, is not only in order to protect others, but in order to protect yourself. This is something new, which Mother Allah doesn't know. Of course, this comes under the rebuke and the repetitory, which I discussed so many times, that basically human beings possess nothing. Actually, the world of the world, not only as property, material goods, but as human life, and human emotions, and human thoughts, is a condition. And Shomu is taking to them. And Shomu Allah, a good follower, and Shomu Shalos, a good Shalos, Susan Allah. That's exactly what Rabbi expressed in Al-Tahtasu, Bosa Al-Gadi Hayat. Rabbi meant to say that not only life, and the question of life is life and death, even crippling the hand, it's forbidden, because again, the hand is not mine, the finger is not mine, it belongs to Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's going to be. Yikad Amri Mishum Sakone, he said, yes. I want you to say, when you say Yikad Amri Mishum Sakone, Yikad Amri Mishum, so the student is not for you to let students, students, Mishum Sakone. Yikad Amri, some say, rather than something else. Kyoko Sutra. What is Kyoko Sutra? Kyoko Sutra can be interpreted in two ways. There is also a prohibition against retouching, against destroying property. Vandalism is prohibited. Again, I want to destroy my property. I want to destroy my property. Again, there is no law prohibiting vandalism if it is ruined to my property. I can take my furniture and destroy it, and set fire to them. If the fire is not, of course, it's not danger on me, then it's in danger on me. The house of my neighbor cannot spread. But if I take appropriate safety measures, and I just set fire to my property, and I want to set fire to my house, whatever I, there's no law which can prevent a person from destroying his property. And according to the Jewish law, is Amkara Kelim Bacham, Asher Amkelim, Kelim Amkara God in the Hamasa. If he destroys a beggar, the jacket, or I break a glass, you know, and people get into a tantrum, you know, and sometimes they begin to destroy, destroy dishes to each other. According to Jewish law, it's prohibited from one gets mounted, it's one embedded. Destruction of property is prohibited. Not only destruction of my body, but destruction of us again. Then win. So this is not my property. The property belongs to Kodesh Baruch Hu. But the Shem Ora is related to Yeshua. The earth belongs to God, belongs to God. So, but he gave it to me. He gave it to me just on me, for a certain purpose. The purpose for which he gave it to me. We justifies my ownership, actually, is circumscribed and well-defined. If I begin to destroy, so the lease I have on this property is not going to expire immediately, and I forfeit all my rights of ownership, and then it means that I destroy not my own property, but the property of the same thing. You should choose to do that. How much will the Sudha cost? A small amount, a limited amount of money. How much will I destroy? A piece of meat, how much? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Whether I destroy $1 million, destroy $5, even the property I destroy is worth a short putter, just one putter. It comes on the lap of the sash that the paper. So now, Akere, Akele, and the Hamasai, it is a Russian Baltash. As a matter of fact, I mean, there is only one act of destruction has been permitted in the Hadith. One act of destruction. Of destruction has been permitted. Which are? Three elements. This is a fact. Then one Rahman can cut three. What does it express, three elements? Why is three elements required? It's a very strange custom. In America, there is an abundance of food, a lot of custom. It's tricky. Many Rishonim think that three is midrashim. Three elements is, I would say, as far as halacha is concerned, is stricter than avilit elements, than the week of the 7 days of mourning. Three elements is Tosafot Avilit Ruach, so the three is lachna, that's what Rambam says. Why is three elements amendment. On the contrary, someone like one is going to die, it's your ER, so you have to cut. What do you mean to cut? To cut your dress. And you have to destroy. To destroy. What does it show? What does it, yeah, of course it shows that, but what does it show? I mean, if you take it, if you place it within the context of the, of our prohibition, of the Allahic prohibition against destruction of property, you understand? If you contrast the mitzvah tree, on the contrary, the command is to destroy property, to destroy one's garments, and you compare it, or rather you place it within the frame of reference of the prohibition, the injunction against destruction of property. So what does it suggest to you?
A limited.
A what?
A limited.
Exactly what again? Repeat it. Exactly. A village expresses itself in total lack and discipline. And a person is not capable to observe the commandment. And that is the reason why I've made the mutual fun of is before burial, the mourner is relieved of all commandments, not negative commandments, I mean positive commandments. He does not only doesn't, he must not recite his prayer, he must not recite the broche, he must not lay still, must not put on the tithes. Why? Because Avelis, what does Avelis express itself upon the others in demonstrating of dehumanization of the personality, in dehumanizing myself, in, so to say, in exhibiting my animal instinct, in showing that I have lost control and self-discipline with the human traits. This is the difference between animal man. Man can discipline himself, can control himself. He can control his emotions, his biological pressure. He can abstain, as I told you last time, I can retreat. But even though, I mean, biological pressure demands of me, I should move forward and reach out for something. The ability to abstain to the tree, this is you. So ability expresses itself in symbolizing the human, the inability of the mourner to simply to control himself. In losing his humanity. And humanity, apparently, has expressed itself in one trait. It's the trait of freedom. Be very careful. I'm free to abstain and to retreat. And I'm free also to move forward. I can make the movement of the coin and also engage in forward movement. I can do, and I can do, and I can also, I'm capable of abstaining. The mourner is showing that he lost because he's confronted with death, and death is the ugliest experience which man has. It's ugly because death defeats man. Defeats everything in man. His aspirations, his hopes, everything. I mean, one is sensitive, standing in a cemetery and just watching. But the burial, I mean, so you have a feeling of what kind of feeling does one get? What essentially it's philosophical, so the feeling of existential nausea, it's nausea. The whole business of living and dying is nausea. It's an ugly business. It is senseless and completely useless. For a moment you think, what am I aspiring to? What I am living for? What I am fighting for? What am I reaching out for? For a moment you think, the whole world collapses. Meaningless. This is the idea of only nothing over from my parents. Everything is amazing. You get a lot of that problem. So it means, the animal is not affected by death. so she doesn't accept to die, she doesn't anticipate that. When he dies, I have to say, I'm telling me, Baboy, I'm here. So the animal has no experience of death. Only the human being, because he can anticipate, he can expect. There is life. The human being can actually, has aspirations, he lives in the future. So he anticipates death. So the Avela is basically, what does Avela show? Particularly the immediate response to death. What do you call Aninus? Ein Kriya with the Shastrimu. When you tear your claws, and with the Shastrimu, then you are excited. And you just are shocked by the sad news that someone who was so dear to you died. What does it show? The Aloha was very sensitive. When the Aloha understood death, Aloha never has tried to decorate death, or to adorn death, or to tell people that death is beautiful. Never! Aloha was very realistic, as far as death is concerned. So the Avil, the response on the part of the mourner, the survivor, should be one of what has complete loss of self-respect and self-dignity. Self-respect and dignity. We should express the loss of humanity. When one loses humanity, then he loses discipline of himself. When he is overwhelmed, he's completely defeated. How does it express itself? In destroying property. In destroying property. By destroying property, man shows himself as an animal. An animal that may destroy. Unless he has a physical, an animal, how can he stop an animal? I mean, from trespassing and destroying. If he is dead, a flower or an orchard or a field which is cultivated, how can you stop an animal? By doing it, it is a stance, I mean, it stands on it. But you cannot tell the animal not to trespass. The destructive nature of man, which is the animal and the devil man, comes to the foreground in moments of despair. This is true, and that's why, and that's the reason also. For the Aloha, that the Amen, before burial, has been released of all weakness. And interesting also is that the Kinyan, interesting, you know, Kinyanim are prohibited to enjoy some contaminating the dead body. So if one of the seven relatives dies, of one of the one, so the Kinyan is not only permitted to bury the person, or to defile himself, but he is commanded to do so. Chacham told us that the wife of Yeshiva came, died there at Pesach, the first time he was busy, so he wanted. He made arrangements that someone else should prepare the funeral or the burial, in order that he should remain free and be able to enter the Mikalino and to eat and to celebrate Pesach. That's when the Chacham took him by force, to the air and air and to the fire. Again, he chose. You see, the sanctity of the priest is a characteristic mark of what a human being. Among human beings, there's people who are tired, and people who have climbed up the ladder of fiduciary. But when one faces death, is confronted with this disaster of death. So humanity is lost completely. And that's why there is no kubune. You cannot speak about kubune. If the enemy in man, the beast in man comes before God, how can you distinguish a king or a Levite, the priest or a Levite or Israel? That is destruction of property. It's one of the expressions and demonstrations of ability. If it is a pedagogical educational method, I mean, the Gemara Shabbos. The Gemara and Shabbos. Now, then it tells the purpose. If you have to save the son, what else is there about it? Not laying on the basis. But this is destruction of property. And then again, destruction of property means a property of $1 million. But means to take diamonds and throw into the river. It's a small piece of meat. And in general, and there is something else. This is number one. Number two, there is another principle involved in Brother's testament. That's all, is protection of life, protection of property, your own property, your own life, and there is something else. What else? No? I beg your pardon? No, I mean something else. There is this, again, a strange aloha. Strange aloha, yeah. But when we explore, I mean, the approach of the aloha, the human life, we understand it. There's a strange aloha, you have it. You have it in Bamiti and the whole. You should not, simply, you should not degrade food. Food should be handled with respect. You cannot take bread and throw it into the gutter. Is it forbidden? You cannot take food, particularly bread, and throw it into the disposal unit. For instance, I mean, even there's only once a year when the destruction of bread is mandatory, not only permitted, but mandatory. This is Chometz Pesach. Otherwise, it's forbidden. Forbidden. And the Gemara in Bamitzia tells us that no Jew has ever, I mean, so to say, degraded food. Always were very careful. They handled food with respect. The gold record is itself. It's an injunction, yes. Cannot take food, I mean, throw into the garbage can. We do it in America. You throw chickens, I mean, dinner, I mean, throw into the garbage can. Yeah. But according to Jewish law, it's prohibited. Food should be eaten. Should be consumed. You know, if you want to use the bread, right, but you leave one slice of bread and you burn it. You make a fire and you burn it and then air pitch of it in the ready as well. Yes. This is, bread should be handled with dignity. Respectful. Why? What? With you, a children to it, huh? Again, because bread sustains human life. And the human life, which is to Chazal, was a mystery. I mean, it's still a mystery to us, but remain a mystery. Human life. And since bread is indispensable for human life, no human life can be sustained without food. So food somehow is deserving of respect. It's again children to it. You should not spoil bread, not because it's touching a problem. Because if you cut your finger and the blood will drip, but you'll spoil the bread. You want not to spoil it, not to spoil it. And, of course, and last is something else. The yami es amisul in Russia. So we have three, I mean, destruction of property, destruction of life, destruction of property, and then food, I mean, not to soil food. Not to soil food. Okay. And the yamit esamisudin. What means the yamit esamisudin? What means the yamit esamisudin? Rashi introduced a third interpretation. The yamit esamisudin. The yamit. I'm assuming the people who were invited. You'll feel what? You'll feel... Huh? It will be offensive to the Mitzvah. To be offensive to the Mitzvah. To be offensive. Those invited, I mean, to serve such food, to be offensive, to be displeasing to them. To be displeasing. To be repugnant. So what... Here is another point that we know. Yeah, no. Again, one can say, now they say, the Yippies and Yippies say, what do you care how I am, what I do? The Yisroel don't want to eat, or rather not eat. I don't force them to eat, they can refuse to eat. What do people care about my appearance? What do people care about my appearance? Whether I'm groomed or I'm not groomed. If I want, I can walk like a king. Like out of the jungle. What do you care? Again, according to mother-in-law, I have rights. I have to walk around and you see this right is being enforced now, being enjoyed by thousands of people on it. Oh, yeah. You don't have to go to Cambridge. No, I see them at the Yeshiva University as well. It was once I can't wait to the dormitory. I live in the dormitory. I can wait to the dormitory. I'm half past 12. Half past 12, I saw it. I walked through the lobby. I saw a bunch of boys on there. I couldn't seem to identify them. Not only Shuba is there. I don't know. I couldn't identify. It's impossible to identify those fellows on there. What are they just emerged from the forest, from the world with the Germans? All the belongings are. See, well, society is very out there. Well, I mean, they're all talking. The nature of the conversation didn't appeal to me either. So when I walked into my room, I was very tired, I was about to get undressed. Suddenly I remind myself I didn't have my So that's why I wanted to have my bit civil, I'm careful about it. So I thought, shall I go out and talk to them about the civil? I don't know, that's a part of humanity, I mean. So, but finally, you see, you know, the habit is my thought of habit. I went out and said, boys, will you join me for Myers? I said, Myers, they right away jumped up and everybody, and they ran upstairs to get their jackets, and we went to do them for the shuttle coming in, and but according to Jewish law, is one's appearance should be pleasing. My appearance should not be offensive to others, it should not be scared at us. And I'll show you again. For instance, the law basically prescribes that one must not take a haircut. I mean, a full year is in mourning after his father or mother. But there is one stipulation. A full year is required, I want you to know. Yes. However, if his appearance is offensive to his friends, then he's allowed. I mean, not allowed. It's duty bound, it's compliment to take a haircut. Again, my appearance is not my business, not my private business. Again, it doesn't belong to me. Society can intervene. This is Allah. This is Allah. was offensive to him. It was offensive to him. Offensive to him. Then it is the dignity of this. It's again, because the human being is not his own pride. Doesn't belong to himself. And dignity expresses the human divine character, and one is not supposed to do anything. I mean, to simply to destroy his dignity. It is what I wanted to show you. It is just a technical instruction by Rav not to cut meat on the hand, because I might cut with the jugular vein or the main artery, or in general I'll soil the meat. But here is a new outlook on life. I mean, emerges. The fact is that men belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now let's continue. Al teishvu al mitzvah aramis ike be'amre le'isiganu b'lok rishme. You should not fall asleep or sleep without reciting Shema. Why is it called mitzvah aramis? Why is it called the Aramean bed? Why is it called an Aramean bed if you go to bed without saying Shema? You mean because I understand that it's not a Jewish habit. It's a Jew reach matter. But what does Mito Aramis mean? What does it mean? The bed of an Aramean mean. What does it mean? What does it mean? I mean, I told you many times that Kriya Shema Aramis in Chazal plays a very strange, peculiar, unique role. I mean, Kriya Shema Arvis, if you'll just recite the Ma'ariv, you recite. So already the broche, you know, in the morning we have one broche preceding Kriya Shema, and one broche following, two broches preceding Kriya Shema, excuse me, and one broche following Kriya Shema. At Ma'ariv we have two broches preceding, and two brachas following. Which bracha was that? Ashkevena. Okay. What actually do we ask of God in the bracha Ashkevena? What do we petition God for? It's to lie down and get up. To lie down and get up. And then the Me'agenim during the Gaonic period of rest. Prior to that, no one knows exactly the time. People, they added bracha Hashem Leilam Amin Amin. What is the content of the bracha? Bracha Hashem Leilam Amin. Bracha Hashem Bayim. Bracha Hashem Balolo. Bracha Hashem B'Shachveinu. Hashem B'Kameinu. Tiviyotcho Nafshei Sachayim V'Ameitzi. Your hands are the souls of the living ones and the souls of dead ones. Nefesh Kolchoi. The soul of every living thing. It means that in Ma'ariv we entrust our soul to God. We surrender our soul to God. And I told you, interestingly, the next morning we say Lekai Nishom Eshna Sadri. This is the concept of Chazal, that every night, what happens every night when a man retires, is actually, in a limited way of thought, a man dies every night, and resurrection takes place every morning. He is revived every morning. Because death, temporary sleep, is temporary death. Because basically, there is no response to stimuli. I mean, my faculties, the actions of my faculties are actually dulled and blunted. I mean, they are not active. I mean, I'm not conscious. It is similar, it is resembles actually death. And wakening up, the awakening in the morning, is actually similar to the miracle of transformation, of resurrection, of revival. This is Chazal. And before you go to bed, you have to entrust your soul to God. Surrender. This is Shor Bechol Vekumecho. And that's why if you go to bed without Krishna, so there is your bed is one that is resembles a mito aramis. What does mito aramis mean? If you take everything for granted, if you take life for granted, if you think it's natural life, it's a part of the biological process. When a man gets tired, and one's faculties are exhausted, he of course has to sleep to come in and refresh, to replenish.
his vigor, his...
And can't he see quite a biological process? It is a biological process. Of course a biological process. It is. But this does not rule out that man must entrust his soul to God. As a matter of fact, they are speaking there right in Tanakh. I said many times, the pachad balelis, the fear of the night. Well, what is there to be? Why should one be, impressed with the fear of the night? What happens at night? Nothing. I mean, if I travel at night, go out in New York on the street at night, you have to be afraid. Really, I am afraid when I walk along the street of New York at night. What otherwise has always talked me pachad, but the first is me pachad balelis. What is the fear of the night? It's the fear of death. It's the fear of death. Because if one is unconscious, it's almost in a state of coma, more or less. Unconscious. Well, for a period of several hours, it is reminiscent, at least, of death. This is the pachad balelis. As a matter of fact, I can halachically show to you that the mechayev of Krishna at night, halachically, it actually is what engenders the factor that engenders the chiyuv Krishna at night is the mitachad balelis. It's not so much the night itself, but the mitachad balelis. And that's why Krishna was introduced ala mita. The Gemara says it is very tired, it cannot reach ma. It is, you know, we cannot. So if we at least let him say one person. The Yotro Askid Rufi Adushem Kevan. In thy hand I entrust my life. You are the God of Christ. I hope that you return this person. This is a Jewish viewpoint of it. And that's why if you examine the text, you'll find the same idea. The same idea. If one takes biological process for granted, you see, it's a natural law. And we are always expect the natural law to work in our favor. Always expect. We always expect nature to help. Sometimes nature is helpful, but sometimes nature is very treacherous, extremely treacherous. Sometimes it's very treacherous. And it's exactly what Krishna Shalila is. Al Tikdanu Belay Krishna, you shouldn't sleep in our future. The same is true, for instance. If you see what Chazal, how much fuss Chazal made about Suda, about Nilo, Mikiras Yadayim, Birkas Hanenina, Mikirecha Minoret, and then Birkas Hamozen, why so much fuss about Nilo? It's a very simple process. Why is the Chazal so meticulous about Nilo? Because the process of eating, actually, which is life-sustaining, to Chazal was a mystery. And it was not, a man should not take it for granted, the fact that he has food. That food grows, that the soil actually yields its produce. The fact that he is capable of eating, that simply he has the food, has the money to buy the food. And not only has the money to buy the food, but many people have money to buy food. But their diet is very limited. They cannot digest, they cannot assimilate the food. And the fact that he can digest the food and he's able to assimilate food, he's able to take advantage of this process. Itself is again a mystery, Chazal, which requires special attention, so to say. Which requires actually preliminary activities on the part of man, like the Tilas Yadayim. And then when the process of consumption of food was completed, after it had been completed, so I have to thank God. And you thank God not only for the food he provided me with, but for the fact that I am capable of eating, that I can assimilate the food, and the whole process of sustenance of life was to Chazal the great mystery. Chazal were never so much, we are impressed also by inorganic matter. It was particularly what attracted their attention, and what intrigued them very much is the phenomenon of life. And it's very strange. While in the inorganic world, the science has made so much progress, the behavior of inorganic matter is known. Physics has made so much progress in the last 50 years, the last half century. And we know that the behavior of the atom, or whatever it is, of the inorganic particle, and it's very strange the society which could figure out ways and means how to land the man on the moon, and this split second precision, it's split second precision, because I mean you cannot play around it. It's just these guesses. The same society stands helpless immediately. When one cell, organic cell, goes berserk and begins to develop irregular. Can't help it. It's very interesting that the mystery of inorganic matter God allowed men to explore. We don't know everything, we are far from everything, but we know a great deal about it. While the behavior of organic matter is still a closed book. Closed book. And that's why Chazal has considered life as the great adventure and the great mystery for which men should eternally be thankful to God. Life processes of thought, the human awareness, consciousness, the psychic life, the spiritual life. When you say life, we don't mean only biological, in the biological sense. We mean the spiritual sense, the intellectual sense. My mind thinks, my mind figures out, my mind anticipates. My ability to perceive things and so on and so forth, and so on. I mean, that's why Chazal is always impressed upon us not to take life as something that's for granted, as something which God owes to us. He doesn't owe us anything. And that's why Kriya Shema Shalaila, the process of sleeping, regaining my strength, resting through sleep, refreshing myself, and so forth. I mean, this itself was to Chazal a mystery. Of course, Mito Arami means the bed of the ignorant person, basically. It's not so much Arami, not you. The ignorant person takes everything for granted. Everything for granted. To an ignorant person, the whole world is not a mystery. It's a simple idea. I can tell you, there's some arithmetic problem in arithmetic. The intelligent person, his life is the greatest of all mysteries. Vike de Amre, le sin sivu giyute. You should not marry a convert. Of course, our relationship to conversion is a strange relationship. Now and after all, it is placed on the agenda as priority number one. What's going on there? The question, Gieres. We are not too much interested in Gieres. We are very, very, very zealous and eager to get to convert as many people as possible the way Christianity was. It would be untrue. We are not. As a matter of fact, the Jews had been eager, in antiquity, been eager to convert people. Christianity wouldn't have come into existence. The Jews could simply, I mean, during the time when Christianity emerged, so the Roman world, Rome, was reached the state of decadence and was, and Ra actually was realized that idolatry and paganism is too primitive. And it was looking actually for a religion. The Jews could capture Rome. They could capture Rome. And of course, if the Jews had captured Rome, they would have captured the European continent. You know, they go, well, the Christianity did. Christianity captured Rome, conquered Rome, and then through Rome, I mean, little by little it infiltrated the northern part of Europe and so forth, and Central Europe and so forth. The Jews were not, and also before Islam emerged, the Arab tribes that are in the Arab Peninsula, I mean, realized again that the idolatry is too primitive, and many were converting to Judaism, as in Rome. We had in Rome during the time, the pre-Christian time, I mean, just the last century before, Before, I mean, we had many Jewish converts. We had many converts in the royal palace among the Roman aristocrats. You know that very well. We had many, and the aristocracy in Rome was ready to join Yahadis. But we have never invited them. We've never encouraged them. The same was true during the century, the last century before Islam emerged, and then the Arab tribes began to shake off the extremities, animism, and began to search for a civilized religion. And many converts, as a matter of fact, Muhammad's anti-Semitism, his resentment of the Jew, was due to the fact that the Jewish Arabs have resented him, have rejected him. In Medina, in particular, they were translated to Medina. If the Jews had been very aggressive, they could have captured the Arab peninsula. Then we would have a different problem. All our problems now would have been solved. The Jews were not very anxious to get there and to recruit there. And there was never recruitment at there. Never. Never, never. Never. They want to show Nine of Israel. Some people are interested now, in converting the Japanese, the Chinese. The Japanese and Chinese are not ready to join our fold. But so they want to simply distort history and tell us a story that the Jews were people who felt they have a mission. They had a mission to convert humanity. It isn't true. All right, different story. But why the Jews acted like that is a different story. But there is another problem about Gerim. But Gerim is a tremendous problem. I don't mean Gerim who come and just and accept Jewish faith. Because of some convenience or because they fell in love with the Jewish boy or on the contrary, the Jewish girl. I'm not speaking about those Gerim, but even Gerim who come and join us because of conviction, motivated by ideological reasons. There is a strange problem about a girl, and that's what Chazal means. The human being consists actually. If you ask me what is a human being, who is it? The human being actually engages either in retrospection. It means he remembers the past, or he aspires to a certain objective in the future. Either he thinks of the past, or he beholds the future. That's what William James calls the stream of consciousness. But a human being is not a static entity. There's always emotion. It keeps on moving. He moves from retrospection, from the past, into the future. Either he anticipates dreams about the future, builds castles in the air, or he nostalgically he reproduces his past. Of course, the older, if you'll take a young man, of course, he's 20, 22, so he's more engaged in prospection, so to say, in beholding the future, in dreaming, in anticipating events, rather than in remembering it. The older a person gets, I can tell you from my own experience, so he's passionate beholding of the future, he expires gradually, and he willy-nilly, he begins to reminisce nostalgically. So sometimes nostalgia is so... The impact of nostalgia is crushing, actually. It is a very sad experience. It's a very sad... What is it so? A human being is memory and anticipation. Now the question is, you take a woman or a man who is 35 years old, 30 years old. He was born in a Christian home, into a Christian home, raised on Christianity, attended church every day, and enjoyed. Sincere fellow, I'm not speaking about agnostic. If he's not agnostic, he was neither a Christian, he'll never be a Jew, even after girls. An agnostic can never be converted. It's ridiculous to speak. Compared to what? Ridiculous. That's why I've never participated in any Gerus ceremonial or ritual. in America, because most of them don't care. They don't care. There's no couple of mitzvahs. I mean, it's an act of faith still. Anyway, what if it's sincere? And still going, comes on here. All right. And then at the 35 years, or that's 25 years, so he changes his affiliation and he joins the Jewish community. So what he remains is what kind of half of his personality will always be Christian. You cannot tell him. You cannot take a person and tell him, forget your past. You cannot say to a person, forget your past, abandon your experiences, forget your father and mother and sisters. All the tender moments, all impressions. I mean, man has, I mean, memories of his youth, of his childhood. I have memories of his childhood. And are the most stimulating ones. Now, the most stimulating, as far as creativity of man is concerned, his memories are very stimulating. The memories are the catalyst, actually, which accelerates and makes men move toward the future. And the memories are not Jewish. Of course, when God told Abraham, when Abraham converted, so God told him, "Lech lecha me'aretzecha u'me'lateicha u'me'beit avicha el haaretz asher arecha." Forget everything. But Abraham could do it, I mean. But the ordinary human being cannot forget. He cannot sever with a part of himself. Cannot sever the bond with himself. After all, the human being is not just a computer. There is unity of personality. There is this stream of consciousness, which is connected. Not connected, it's one stream. I mean, I don't know what is past, what is future, what is present, as far as I'm concerned. So, I mean, I remember my conversation with my father, and my wife, and so forth. It is a living experience. It's a living experience. And the older one gets, I mean, the more impact the past has upon him. I mean, it does not mean I want you to understand very well. People speak about a person who lives in the past. I'm not speaking about a person who lives in the past. A person who lives in the present. But he should remember the past. If he forgets the past, I mean, so there's no personality. Personality is a continuum. And this is the problem of the idea. It's a tremendous problem. You cannot. There is no miraculous change. And that's what Rabbi says, Alpi Alohi, you can accept the idea. And the Ger is a full-fledged Jew, and he's justified all privileges that we enjoy. He's just as, his sanctity is the same as a Jew who was born in the Jewish home. You know the famous letter by Maimonides to Avrozo, to Ivadia Ger. Ivadia Ger wrote Maimonides a complaint that in Shul, the Adonis, he doesn't get the best aliyah. They didn't have a year, whatever it is, before Achrein aliyah. And they done some people drop remarks, you know. Humiliating remarks, insulting remarks. So you know the famous letter of the Rambam, he said that he's superior to the born Jew. The born Jew, I mean, actually did not freely, by free choice, accept Judaism. He was born into Jewish home. But he was born into Gentile home, and by free choice, I mean, left his house, he's just like Abraham. And so forth, on, I mean. It is true, I mean. There's no discrimination against Ger, on the contrary. The Torah has emphasized 50 times, "Va'af Shem is a Ger." You should love the Ger. The Ger will use another time, you should love the stranger, the Ger. And whoever, it's very interesting that with regard to the love of a Jew, the Torah used the dative case. They asked not as Re'ach Otomecho, but Le Re'ach Otomecho. The dative case. They asked Le Re'ach Otomecho. And when the Torah speaks about love of the Ger, the Torah uses the accusative, the objective case. Va'aftem esager. What's the difference between va'aftem le'reach otomecho or va'aftem esager? The Ramban already knows it. Le'reach otomecho means, of course, you should love him. But it's not exactly the way you love it yourself. Va'aftem esager means exactly in the same manner as you love yourself. The Torah emphasizes the duty of love as far as the convert is concerned. And that's him placed him above the born Jew. Certainly, of course. Why did the Torah emphasize so much? Chazal said in so many places, so many passages, the Torah emphasized so much that you should love the Ger. Apparently there's good reason not to love it. Otherwise the Torah wouldn't have repeated. Good reason is because the Ger can never be a Jew, a complete Jew, because half his life doesn't belong to us. Half his life doesn't belong to us, it belongs to somebody else. I mean, and that's what Roger told his children. He didn't say you shouldn't, but he said, Latin will be yours. Don't worry, dear. If possible. It's realistic. This is realistic. Alright? That's why Chazal had various opinions about hearing. You know Chazal, the opinion about hearing. Some say, some welcome hearing, some didn't welcome hearing. It's a problem, it is a problem, it's such a thing. Of course we have Gerim, Shmai Vatayin, where Gerim converts, the Shmai Vatayin, where we see the president of the Sanhedrin, the Supreme Court. The fact that where Gerim did not prevent them from being appointed as the CS Sanhedrin. As a matter of fact, they spoke in Hebrew with a strange dialect, and whatever they said was incorporated into the Aloche, in the terminology of the Aloche, or even their mistakes. The phonetic decisions in the head. Rabbi Meir Chazal say was a ger. Rabbi Akiva was a son of a ger. His father Yates, he didn't prevail the fact that he was a descendant of Gerim did not prevent Rabbi Akiva to be proclaimed as the greatest, most outstanding scholar in the Jewish world. Rabbi Akiva was immortalized as the hero. Well, the relationship to Gerim was excellent. But we, on the other hand, we knew. Fair, I mean, we were acquainted with facts. That there is a problem about Gerim. The same problem is about Tshuva as well. About Tshuva Jew. If you live the life, if for instance, half his life you live without observing Torah mitzvah. That means his memories are secular. And he can never change his memories. There's no power in the world which can change his memories. Right? Age of 50, suddenly. He decided to change his life. It's a problem. It's a split life. There is a schism in the personality. Alright. The third interpretation is simply not to sit on the bed, on the chair of the Aramean before the erasers pushing, showing. But I must tell you, Chaim told me a story, and it's very characteristic. You know, when you study Gemara Avodah Zarah, there are many provisions, and many instructions, many injunctions pertaining to the relationship between Jew and non-Jew. One instruction says that a Jew should not walk in front and let a non-Jew walk behind him, because he may step in the back. And then there's another injunction that the Jew should not take a haircut or a shave from an angel. So he had a student of his when he studied us in the university, then Gemara. So a group of students protested against our intolerance and our suspicious nature. And they protested. Of course, they accused us of being too parochial and so forth, of rejecting universality. Not caring for human beings, but just for Jews. I mean, we are accused now of that. Now it is a major charge which is held to the Jew. The Jew is interested, he's charitable. But only as far as his brother, but not as far as humanity. It's the major charge now, the anti-Semite. I want you to know. Each door has its unique indictment of the Jew, each generation. The indictment of the Jew now. That he's charitable, very committed, but so is his friend. His friend is not his friend. But, so anyway, in such an argument, you hear some Jews as well. But he didn't say a word. And he told them he wants to take a walk with them. They took them for a walk. They took them straight to the old city. The old city, and they passed by a barber shop, another barber shop. And one of his students needed a haircut. He told doctor, here's a barbershop, I can check. I'll enter the body. Here's a barbershop, where is this? This is the razor that cuts my throat. I want you to know, we don't understand, because the brain with whom we live are different, civilized people.
civilized peacefulness, without understanding of human dignity and health. We live in a civilized society. But don't forget that Chazal is a different society. Actually, there was very precious about it. There's nothing wrong with being precious. The Jew, he told me, Jews will not let Arabs walk behind him. He's afraid. So if you can't blame the Israelis, you can't blame Chazal who introduced such a law. The situations were similar. I want you to understand, I mean, we've got to place everything in a historical perspective, I mean. And this was true even of the Middle Ages. There is an autobiography by Rabbi Yanki Temin, who lived in the 18th century, in modern times. So he under certain date, I don't remember, Davis or Schwarz, right? A miracle happened to me. So you read, what happened to him? He left the ghetto for a while. And he met a monk. And the monk gave him a stern look. But he didn't do anything. So he came home and wrote down a miracle happened to him, that the monk didn't do any harm to him. It was the mentality of the Jew. And I want you to know, it's not just a mentality. It's a product of history. For instance, a Jew is afraid of a dog. Why is afraid of a dog, a Jew? You know, this is a characteristic trait of a Jew. He's afraid of a dog. I'm afraid of a dog. A dog is afraid of a dog. A Jew is afraid of a dog. You don't know that. You don't know? Fine, I can tell you, I'm afraid of a dog. No, you're not, fine. So you're not a Jew. Yes. Why is he afraid of a dog? A Jew is afraid of two things. Of a dog and of a drunkard. A gentle drunkard. Why? It is totally justified. You know what dogs used to do to Jews? When the innkeeper couldn't pay his rental every month or every week, what did the poet do to him, the so-called Polish nobleman? What did he do to him? Just, used to set the dog on him. What did the Nazis do with the dog? They killed babies with the dog. They used to bring the big dog, I mean the police dog. They used to stop babies and set the dogs on the babies and so on. The dogs used to devour them and tear them apart. And the same is true actually of drunkenness. Because basically the cruelty, many told me, they're inmates of patients, that they are pretty sure about it. That those, I mean, brigades, so-called which used to liquidate, the special brigade, used to liquidate them. Jewish communities, Jewish towns completely. Those, I mean, the individual members of the brigade used to be traveling, were given either drugs, not alcohol, but drugs, before, I mean, they were sent, I mean, to exterminate the Jewish people. Because even the Germans, after all, were human beings. You couldn't do it without being intoxicated. That's what people were in the concentration camps told me. They're pretty sure about it. If they had been sober, they wouldn't have done it. At least they wouldn't have been as cruel as they were. This is of course, I mean, it's our historical memory. We have a long memory. So that's what Chazal say. I mean, it happened that Rapopin, not only Rapopin, it happened a few times. That people try to collect the debt in order to get rid of me of Rapopin and so she was ready, I mean, to accuse him of murder. That he sat down upon the baby and strangled it. That's exactly what was said. We are realists, actually. Many things we didn't understand in the past, but we do understand them now. Because of the experiences the Jews now go through in Israel. Many Gemorans, many things. We didn't understand. The Chazal spoke about the loneliness of the Jew. The Herzl didn't understand it. Why should a Jew be lonely? The Jew is lonely because he's a beggar.
because he's an intruder. The Jew should have their own state. I mean, the Jew will be respected and you enjoy the same sympathy that any other member of a civilized nation enjoys. But Baruch Hashem, we have a state, we have an army, it's a good one. And yet, I mean, we are the loneliest people on earth. The loneliest people. On the contrary, the emergence of the state of Israel has emphasized and made it so obvious and so conspicuous that we are lonely. Yeah, I mean. So this is exactly what we have. Now the last. The last is that one should not pass by, pass in the behind the synagogue while the what? Why? And the Gemara says it's only if there is no other synagogue in town. If there is no other door. Or if there is no other synagogue in town. Or if he doesn't carry any load. Or if he just takes the leisurely walk. But if he is running, if he runs, or he carries a load, so then you don't care. He may catch the front of there. What principle is involved here? What principle is involved here? Huh? Yeah, but you see, it's not, the fact that apparently he already recited his prayer. If he didn't recite his prayer, I mean, the Chazal wouldn't have relieved him, I mean, of his duty. He has recited his prayer, 5 hours in the morning, 7 o'clock. And I face by a synagogue, and they are busy, I mean, reading their prayers at 9. I have to enter. Why do I have to enter? I don't have to daven, I davened already. I can't repeat my daven twice. Why do you have to enter? No, not me, Samir. This is American problem. If they needed it for me, the would stand outside. Call me, the beast come in. Nothing. Why? What is the reason? People should not suspect him of being negligent, simply. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to die. Somebody, because they should not suspect him. And that's what I'll say, if there's another door, I mean, they might, they cannot say, I mean, perhaps he'll enter through another door. Or if there's another synagogue. But if there's only one synagogue in town, and he passes in front of the synagogue, and doesn't enter the Besmerdesh, so he'll be what people will say about him, that what, he doesn't pray, he doesn't care, he doesn't want to join the Tibur. So what principle is involved here? What? The Marasai, sorry Marasai, what does Marasai stand for? Oh, there is Marasai. The Yisrael Nikim Hashem Yisrael, correct, what does it stand for? Again, what is it? You don't answer my question. It stands that the reputation of a person does not belong to him. He spoke about his body, correct, so he spoke about his property, about the food he eats. Now it's his reputation. He can say, what do you care what people say? I don't care about public opinion or how people say. One's reputation is sacred. He has no right to sacrifice. Without that principle, all the laws pertaining to Marisayim, the Yisrael Nikim, Arishem Yisrael, make no sense. See, again, modern ethics doesn't understand, so we cannot speak about law here. But modern ethics doesn't understand it. Why? It's my reputation, I can sacrifice it. I can send the whole world on it. I can just contemptuously and ignore public opinion. It's exactly what he had to do. A man should not ignore, because it's not his reputation. So if he feels fallen in disrepute, this means the human personality is desecrated. People will not treat him with respect. Their views will be degraded. And the spiritual personality doesn't belong to him. Neither does the reputation. One station in life. This is the aloha of Marisai. This is the aloha of Yitzhak Mikir. This is the aloha when the one who used to go into Trumas HaLishka, the Lishka, to take the money for the Kalbanes, was dressed in a garment which has no pocket. And very short, not white sleeves. You see, people shouldn't say that he hits on a few coins in his pocket or in his sleeves, in the fold of his sleeves. And he imagined that whoever entered was not a thief, you see. Representative came, priest is to enter. That's not reputation. First of all, First of all, there is knowledge of people. People are malicious. People are weak. Actually, people should not suspect. They're the donors or donors of food. If my test buyers want a synagogue, mine as well. Why should a man say, on the situation, they're not interested in government? Perhaps he doesn't already say that one. A daybreak or sunrise. But people have two alternatives. So always the alternative, but I mean the negative alternative is adapted. People are by nature suspicious, they're malicious, they're vicious, they're always suspect. And if don't you know that? How easy it is to generate gossip, engender suspicion, and a man should be looked out, not to precipitate negative. Because the reputation is not this. Actually, there is one principle in the Savoya Proverbs. Savoya Proverbs. Not to cut meat on the hand, but on the table. And then not to sit down on a Aramean bed. It's again, either it is caution, because there's an element of risk involved. It is the attitude on the part of men towards life and death. I mean, without Krishna, it means he belongs to God. He has to surrender to God. It's again the same attitude. And even when he says, wait enough with the yote, I mean, al-tadim is permissible. I mean, there's no law prohibiting it. So what is with the last thing in yote? Because you'll have trouble. Two worlds. A Jew marries a non-Jewish girl. Two worlds. I mean, clash is sometimes inevitable. Unless the girl is an ideal type, it can seem to overcome past and past memories and simply change herself into a new personality, unless. But so means it's a marriage which will finally end in failure. So the question is again whether you care or not. Right, if it's prohibited of the aloha according to the law, you prevent it from doing so. But the aloha has no objection to marrying the Giyasa. One of the two accounts and marry the Giyasa. Really? Marry the Giyasa, man. The Giyasa, man. I'm employed, man. He supervises cashers, I mean, all over the world. Yeah, he married the Giyasa. And you can't object to it. Huh? Yes, because she was, you know, she's a former dancer, a nice person. Oh, but she's a real Gineas, there's no doubt about it. She's a real Gineas. Actually, I mean, the Sarsan is a Talmud in Bunyanesh, I mean, she's a real Gineas. But anyway, you cannot object. You cannot object of the Allah. You cannot raise any objection. You cannot even be critical. So Rabbeinu didn't mean to advise his children that it's the Allah, it's prohibited, or there is. He said simply to be unsuccessful, marriage. So the question is, so what does Rabbi care if I want to take a chance? Is my family life? Again, family life is not the property of the person involved. It belongs to God. God is involved in the marriage. You cannot take chances. A risk marriage which might end in failure. Be careful. Your thought. And then, this is the reputation of the person, not his property. That's all. The one principle. What is shame or a similar thing of nature.
יתגדל ויתגדל שמי רבו ועומד אל רוקי שאי ימליך מלכוסי חייכון אל ימיכון אל חייך על בייס ישראל והגולו בזמן קוראים אמרו אמי ושמי רבו לרח לעולם לומי עומיו יזברך וישתבח וישרר וישרמם ויסנסי ויסדר ויסולש מלכודשו בריחו ויסדר ויסולש מלכודשו בריחו